You're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And coming up right now is Claudio's Speakeasy, the literary and all else. And good morning, Claudio.
Good morning. And that was Audrey Layden, everyone. She's my co-pilot today. John Paul is out taking care of his political little district out there. I think he's tallying votes or doing something along those lines.
It's the day. Get out and vote, people,
right.
If you haven't done it already.
Get off that sofa and leave that TV set and go do something. Change this Bush-Bama administration thing we got going on. We've got we have the pleasure of having a wonderful musician on today. Her name is Melanie Moore, and she plays the dulcimer. And she's not only going to play for us, she's also going to give us the history, the origins of the dulcimer. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Pleasure, and I'm going to get right back to you.
Okay.
Got to announce all the sponsors and all that jazz, get all that stuff out of the way so we can just sing and dance for the next hour. Want to mention the Carolina Theater, the historic Carolina Theater of Durham, primary sponsor of Claudio Speakeasy, and also Studio in the Woods with John Demers, who should be on next week, the second half of the show. He's going to be telling us about the movie The Rusty Bucket Kids Club, that mystical thing that I'm in as the train conductor.
Yes.
So I'll probably hear about the footage and how it all came out at this point. And before him, we're going to have Anjanae Bell, the daughter of the mayor of Durham, who is with Bellin Contemporary Dance Theatre. And she's going to be tuning us into her performance coming up at the Carolina Theatre on the 14th. And in May, her and I are actually going to perform together. She's choreographed one of my poems about the downfall of New Orleans by Katrina. And we're going to perform that together on stage. And we'll get more into that when she shows up next week. Anyway, I have the pleasure of having my co-host Audrey Layden here, whom you know from Carrboro Bookbeat. And we'll get into some of what's coming up there. Very quickly, I want to announce what's coming up at the Carolina Theatre in November. November 2nd, we have Little Red Hen, which is a kiddie show, so big guys, don't worry about that. November 6th through the 7th, the A Cappella Society presents So Jam, a bunch of a cappella people. November 11th through the 14th will be Bell and Dance Company, as I just mentioned. The 15th will be the Chamber Orchestra of the Triangle. The 20th will be Math Maniac, another kiddie show. The 21st, Jennifer Holiday, R&B Christmas show. And then on the 29th, the annual John Berry. In December, December 3rd, we have the Hispanic Flamenco Ballet, a kiddie show, sort of, they say. On the 4th of December, Matthew Paul West Foundation, a concert show. On the 10th, Rockapella, Acapella Jazz, and Christmas concert. On the 11th, and through the 13th, they'll be showing the Nutcracker. And on the 15th of December, a Christmas Carol kiddie show version of that. So, to bounce over onto something else that showed up here today, Sherry Monahan, whom I had on some time back, a Western author, has actually come out with her new book, which is about the town of Apex here in North Carolina. She's done a very thorough researching of that township and taken the history way back when, and so that people actually living there can discover for themselves what the place is actually all about. The book is called Apex. It's going to be released during the Independent Film Festival in Apex coming up on the, I believe it's the 20th through the 23rd, or actually 20th through the 22nd. It's done by the 23rd. And the book Apex will be selling for $21.99 by Arcadia Publishing. It'll be available at local retailers, online bookstores, and through Arcadia Publishing at 888-313-2665 or www.arcadiapublishing.com. I just want to mention that as a forerunner. I'm actually going to have her back on the show before all that happens, and we'll discuss the book at some length. And now, to begin with, before I bring Melanie on, I'm going to actually read a little bit of her biography. So indulge me here as I go through this bit of history on Melanie Moore, who's here with the dulcimer today. She was born in Statesville, North Carolina, to Scotch-Irish folks, Morrison, who were former dairy farmers. She was raised in Raleigh, surrounded by instruments and singing. Her mother is a vocalist and has played auto harp, guitar, and accordion. It's quite a combination. Her mother's family is from the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia. She grew up watching Grand Ole Opry with her grandparents and listening to bluegrass. Her grandfather would flatfoot in her kitchen, standing by the fireplace, with his hands in his pockets while watching the evening news with Walter Cronkite. Interesting. What was he tapping to? with Walter Cronkite.
His own personal beat.
That's perfect. Her stepfather, Hyman, is an economics professor at NCSU, so they had people and music from all over the world in their home as a result of him hosting international professors and students. That's a pretty nice gift there. Her stepfather plays flute. My God, everyone plays something. He is Jewish and leads the Hebrew conga line. I've actually never heard of a Hebrew conga line.
That's particular to our family. That's dancing during Hanukkah. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's almost like bringing the tropics into the Hebrew. Perfect. Then her father, Morrison, who could basically pick up an instrument and begin playing it almost immediately. He was in the NCSU marching band when she was little and would attend games, and she would attend games with him, immersed among the band members and the noise. He was the guy who would pick up and play for whoever was absent that day. That's pretty amazing. And he actually pulled it off.
Yeah.
She started playing keyboards at age 3. My God. On an antique pump organ that your mother bought, followed by an old upright piano when she started taking lessons. She is completely self-taught on dulcimer and plays pretty much completely by ear. You used YouTube?
Mm-hmm. YouTube. It's like my musical mentor.
Oh, interesting.
Use that to learn songs.
Amazing what comes with that thing. Let's see. And then you discovered dulcimers via Willard Watson and friends in the village of yesteryear when you were about 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
This was when Voy was in the small building. What's V-O-Y?
The village of yesteryear.
It
used to be in a small building next to the large building it's in now. Just a few artisans there. It was a dirt floor, actually. I didn't know it was Willard Watson, but we'd go every year, and my mom would take me there to look at the crafts, arts and crafts and musicians, and there was a gentleman there selling toys, the paddle dancers, and wood toys, and he had dulcimers hanging up on the wall, and I just remember being mesmerized by them, not knowing what they were, and they didn't play them, but I'd go back every year, and they'd invite me to help demonstrate the toys and things like that. And I only found out as an adult that it was Willard Watson, of course, the North Carolina woodworker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those paddle toys are really neat.
Yeah.
it's an interesting instrument to look at. It looks soothing and comforting and almost like something you can just sort of go up and play even if you don't know how, but I'm sure that's not the case at all.
Well, it is, and the name for the dulcimer comes from the Greek word dulce, meaning sweet, and the Latin root melos, meaning music or melody.
Ah.
So
sweet music.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So mellow out, people. Story is that her and her mom befriended the sweet-bearded older gentleman and his companion, Jack, who would sell wooden toys and instruments in the village of yesteryear. And she would visit them each year, and they would bring her behind the counter to help them demonstrate the paddle dancers and other toys.
Mm-hmm.
She was simply captivated by the dulcimers hanging there and did not discover her host's identity until in your 30s. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When your father pointed out that he was Willard Watson. Explain that.
What's that, the story?
Willard Watson.
Well, Willard Watson, of course, is the cousin of Doc Watson, and he's known for being a storyteller, also a woodworker. And apparently he came to the fair to peddle his wares, historically. A very unassuming person, just a very sweet, quiet person. You wouldn't know, and I don't know if then, this was during the early 70s. The village of yesteryear at the fair didn't really evolve until the 70s, really.
And it was a big thing for a number of years because I remember hearing about that constantly when they were engaged.
Mm-hmm. But it's neat. If you spend any time with other people that play the dulcimer, we all have similar associations. With most people, Willard Watson's name will come up. They've run into him at some point, in their travels. And, of course, Jean Ritchie comes up because she's one of the historic mentors, I guess, of dulcimer players.
And who is Doc Watson in relation? Of course, Doc Watson has a big name around here.
Cousins.
Okay.
Willard Watson was his cousin.
Mm-hmm. And then you discovered during college that the NCSU Craft Center offered a dulcimer building class and enrolled and crafted yourself a decent instrument, as you put it, that I then commenced to play off and on for many years.
So you've made your own.
Mm-hmm. The first one I played.
Mm-hmm.
So that the one I'm looking at is the one you picked?
No, this is one my mother got for me. It's actually made in Connecticut, which might surprise some people. You think of Appalachia, think
near
Kentucky,
the Blue Ridge.
Tennessee, but actually dulcimers are played the full stretch of the Appalachians, which do run up north
into the Adirondacks.
Right, exactly. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So even the Yanks got a hold of them. All right. Your mother has since bought you a handcrafted instrument fashioned in Connecticut, which you just spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Which may sound surprising, but the Appalachian dulcimer, as you said, is played the full stretch of the Appalachian Mountains, even far north. So there we have it. She began simply playing for casual events and family gatherings, realizing what a terrific therapeutic benefit playing for our elders had, and started volunteering for the NC Division of Aging never heard of that, at meetings. Explain that to us.
Well, of course, I grew up hearing bluegrass music with my grandmother, and when I started playing the dulcimer, she's very captivated by it. And I would notice she's in assisted living now. When I visit, I'll play, and it just woke up something in her.
I'm sure.
And I wanted to. I like to volunteer, so I just contacted the North Carolina Division of Aging and asked if they had
good for you
senior centers I could play in. Just a contact where I could meet a lot of people and play, and of course volunteer. And that's when I started playing for their Senior Tar Heel Legislature, which is a group of representatives from across the state, older people that lobby basically for legislation to benefit older residents. And ended up playing at the governor's mansion last year.
That's pretty impressive.
Whoa,
just as kind of an off, just one of those connections. I'd been to one of their meetings, and then the following year just so happened that the meeting was held in there.
And you end up in the governor's mansion.
Yeah. Not bad for an amateur.
Not bad at all. I'd say it takes you out of the amateur status.
Well, it's so great because one of the things with older people, particularly if they are approaching dementia or something like that, they always, always respond to music.
Absolutely, that's true.
They will remember the words and the tune when they won't remember their own children. It's something very, very reaching about music that we're all basic.
And or be soothed by the playing somehow, It's amazing. Other venues that you've been in include Mordecai and Joe Lane House, I remember that place. Historic sites, Franklin County Arts Council, Historic Homes Tour, 10,000 Villages, Anniversary Festival, Whole Foods Market, Whole Foods Market, Local Food and Artisan Festival, Lewisburg United Methodist Church, Pleasant Grove United Methodist Church, and other various outings and gatherings. You want to elaborate on that?
Family meetings, pig pickings.
Aha, okay.
Yeah, things,
pig pickings.
Just spontaneous gatherings.
Things we just don't make note of, but they're happening. And she is now working on fulfilling your childhood dream of being a piano bar type musician via friendly local cafes and coffee shops. So are you actually doing that already or slipping into that?
I'm working on it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Her music is also very well suited for gallery openings and receptions. As a matter of fact, I'm going to keep you in mind for that next time I have an art exhibit. Pig pickings, educational demos, and anywhere that sweet Appalachian ambiance would benefit those working or attending. She will be playing holiday music at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh this season. Any idea? Can you tell us when? Or do you know?
Sometime in December.
Okay.
Just various times during the holidays.
Mm-hmm. And she's simply working on building her repertoire to include more ballads and popular songs suitable for weddings and other special events. Her next step in development is to begin attending dulcimer workshops in North Carolina and Tennessee. Well, I thought I'd give that little introduction so the people would know who we're talking to today, but I would love to have you elaborate on the history of the dulcimer, the German origins and so on, and then just go into playing anytime you like.
Yeah.
And Audrey and I will toss bones and questions at you.
Okay. All right. Most times when I say dulcimer, people think hammer dulcimer, which, is the large zither that's played normally on, not stilts, but a table played with hammers. That's actually a biblical instrument that came from Iran. And it's in the same family. It's like the same genus, but this is a different species. The Appalachian dulcimer is also known as the mountain dulcimer. Some people call it a hog fiddle, harmony box, but it's basically a fretted zither. And of course, a zither is an instrument where the strings are along the body and don't extend past the body of the instrument. Like a guitar is not a zither. The origins of the dulcimer, there's different ideas, but roughly sometime in the 1700s, there were a lot of German immigrants from Pennsylvania that moved into the Shenandoah Valley area. Some of them even predated some of the Scotch-Irish folks that were coming into the area, because you normally think of Appalachian dulcimer as being kind of an Irish or
That's
Scotch-Irish
true, yes.
instrument. But
the lowlands, so to speak,
mm-hmm,
at least.
Yep. The German Mennonites brought what was called the Scheitholz, which, mm-hmm. similar to the dulcimer, but smaller, flatter, much quieter, usually bowed, played more for church music, mm-hmm. kind of quiet tunes.
Played with a bow on your lap?
Yes, they would bow the note strings,
huh.
as opposed to strumming, like, right. you know, I do, and it's more typical for the
kind of like a flat
Scotch-Irish.
Fiddle, mm-hmm. in a sense.
Yeah, to some degree. And I guess the story is that, you know, the Scheitholz had its limitations for the Scotch-Irish fiddle players, and when they got a hold of it, they wanted to, you know, rip-roar fiddle tunes with the Scheitholz, and so the instrument, as you see here, it got longer than the Scheitholz, deeper body. They cut sound holes. They elevated the fretboard, and the fretboard, as you see, is hollowed out underneath to create more volume and resonance. Basically so that it's more suited towards like the fiddle-type tunes or dance tunes.
I see. Give us the size mm-hmm. of the one that you're holding on your lap.
Say,
what, about 4 feet, 3 feet?
Maybe three feet.
And it looks like maybe 2 inches thick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds right. I'm playing it on the lap, so, of course, you know, it's sitting here flat on my lap over both knees with the strings upward. Some people play them over the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Some people play them on a tabletop.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple instrument, but there's so many ways and techniques to play it that when you hear one, you say, that sounds like a dulcimer, but depending on how people are playing it, they can
right.
add a lot of variability to it. A lot depends on the wood that it's made from, how old it is. Older dulcimers are prized because they develop this nice mellowness as they age.
What's the wood, the one you have there?
This one is cherry,
uh-huh.
poplar, and maple, which... most of the instruments, of course, were made from whatever was local. And although you can't really identify where one comes from now, because people can get wood, you know, from
anywhere.
But some of the older ones, you can sort of identify where they were made by the woods that were used to make them. But the Scheitholz's interesting, and your German, of course, is better than mine, but a Scheit roughly means, you said matchstick.
Well, actually, no, I was thinking you said Streich. Streichholz would have been... like a matchstick, but
mm-hmm.
Scheit, I think that's more of a name for somebody.
Okay.
It doesn't actually have a definition.
And, of course, the way that it's written now has probably been morphed over the years.
No doubt.
Yeah, but roughly...
Could be the original inventor was named Scheit, and then mm-hmm. Holtz just attached mm-hmm. to his name, which means wood.
Yeah, but one of the stories about the name of the Scheitholz is that Michael Pretorius in the 1600s, of course, a classical composer, saw one, was very intrigued and thought that it looked like a little pile of firewood because it was just a very simple instrument with, you know, wood pieces kind of put together roughly in a box. To some degree, he dismissed it as a ragged peasant's instrument. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, not unlike a lot of native instruments. I mean, they have their place, but, you know, they don't make their way into classical,
right.
You know, classical music.
Yeah. It's surprising, though, what is beginning to merge now from the more folk-oriented craft instruments to
mm-hmm.
very sophisticated. There's become this fusion of all sorts of instruments.
Well, it's a convergence of musical languages.
It's interesting. There's actually different, very interesting
True.
Types of dulcimers. There's one... This one, of course, is all wood and it's hollow-bodied. There's one called the Aquafina, which actually has a portion of the sound box has water in it.
Really?
And it oscillates as you play. And I have not heard one played, but it sounds really fascinating. It kind of has this eerie sort of oscillation to the music. There's a gentleman, and I can't remember his name, who fashioned what he calls a Dulcimaster, which is based on a Stratocaster guitar bass,
mm-hmm.
but it's an electric dulcimer. So you really...
We're just made to make music. That's it.
That's
it. Made to make
those
music.
Hot summer days sitting on that mountain going, I've got to do something. And here we go.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I can tell you a little bit about how it's played and actually
play
us a tune.
Exactly.
In general, the Appalachian dulcimer is what's called a modal instrument. In other words, kind of in layman's term, you basically tune it to a major key. or a minor key. And then if you switch between those, you have to retune the instrument. So it's not like a guitar where you can, or a piano where you can play in different keys. Mine I keep in what's called the Ionian mode, because most Appalachian tunes and fiddle tunes are played roughly in a major key.
And I was told that it had nothing to do with iodine or people eating too many onions, so there we go.
That's right. So what you've got here are two note strings. All dulcimers pretty much are configured the same way. Two note strings that are closest to me. Those are played by depressing them either with your fingers or a note, or I use a piece of bamboo. Mm-hmm. Gives you kind of the warmth of wood, but it doesn't wear grooves as easily as some of the softer woods. So I like using the bamboo noter. And then the other two, you've got four strings. The first two are note strings. You have a middle and then a bass string. The melody is played on your two note strings, and then the other strings are tuned to play as a drone, very much like that hum you hear in the background of a bagpipe.
Yeah,
so I'll play Pan Me Down My Walking Cane. That's a very common folk song to play. Lou Rawls and Jerry Lee Lewis actually did a version of the song. It was featured in Four for Texas, a 1963 movie with Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, although I don't know that many of your listeners will recognize it from that. But it does make its way into different places.
To remind you folks again, this is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else on WCOM 103.5 FM. Got my co-host Audrey Layden in the studio, and we also have the musician Melanie Moore on dulcimer, guiding us through the history of the dulcimer. And back to you.
Sure. One of the things I was going to mention is the pick. People use different things to pick. So I guess traditionally speaking, people would use a noter of some kind, like I used to play the melody, and then a turkey feather or a crow feather.
A turkey feather for...
For strumming.
For strumming.
Mm-hmm.
Are they that firm, the turkey feathers?
Well,
I guess the
and sometimes you trim them down. Yeah, the pointed end.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I meant I didn't realize that even that would be strong enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some people sort of trim them down. They actually like them very thin. And, of course, you get a different sound from them. The thing I do like about the dulcimer with the strumming is you almost have a little bit of percussion that goes along with strumming it. So it's a very simple instrument, but to me it kind of has a sort of a complex sound, you know, between the drone strings and the strumming.
Right.
Yeah. Jean Ritchie, as she got older, she developed arthritis and started looking at different things to make picks from. And actually, in her later years, she would take a top from a Cool Whip container and cut out her picks.
Oh, for
because they were
sakes.
A lot little softer and a little easy. She could cut them to the size that she needed.
Right.
You know, so it was a little easier for
Explain
her to play.
Explain to us who she is.
Jean Ritchie is a folk musician from Kentucky who, to me, she was doing folk music before it was really fashionable. She grew up in the 30s and 40s when radio started to become more popular. And it's interesting because I think back then that, you know, people would embrace folk music. But she actually has not complained, but has commented in the past that with the emergence of radio, you know, quick music and records and performance and things getting louder and faster, that she had a hard time kind of finding a niche, even growing up where she did.
Which was Appalachia?
In Kentucky.
In Kentucky. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she was playing in the 60s in little clubs in the West Village of New York. I mean, the local scene in New York kind of embraced her because she just was herself, and she played... She played what she played. She made no apologies. She played traditional Irish songs and Appalachian songs on her dulcimer in these clubs in New York before, you know, you had that, I guess you call the folk music revival during the 60s and 70s.
Yes.
So she was kind of on the scene.
Peter, Paul, and Mary time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Her music was the first that I'd ever heard actually the dulcimer being played. And my mom, she was, it's our recollection that she was at the State Fair one year and we purchased one of her albums. So my mom, we were playing that when I was younger, and that's where I picked my first, the hand-me-down My Walking Cane, I picked picked off of that album. So
you were saying that you played mainly by ear, so you just by hearing the song you can find it on the dulcimer.
If there's a song I want to learn that I just don't know, I can use music to kind of pick it out,
right,
to help me through it. But I'd say probably 100% of what I play now is things that I've picked off the radio, or I guess I use YouTube to learn new songs.
Yeah, that's
now, and you can
YouTube.
Pretty much find anything. I mean, old recordings, some
so
of the classic artists.
So you've got a good ear.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
A good pitch on that.
That pretty much comes from, to some degree, growing up around people just playing music around you.
And, mm-hmm. Everybody in your family plays something, so I don't see how you could have avoided it.
They do, and we were talking earlier, it's just a part of our of life. You eat, you sleep, you play
music.
Right. And that's really how original dulcimer players learned to play. They weren't classically trained.
Mm-hmm.
And you would apprentice with someone in your neighborhood, basically, and you learn to play by ear. So traditionally, playing by ear is the way, most dulcimers would learn their craft.
Some of my favorite musicians play that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the same when you get into the old, like the Memphis blues and things
like
that. I mean, they didn't go to school to learn how to play these things.
They don't want to make it a science.
Exactly. You went by the guy down the street that you know, or down the road, or in the other county, and you just, pester him to let you hang out and play.
Yeah, well, how does this thing work?
Yeah.
Well, a comparison I've heard is it's the difference between sometimes reading a recipe and making something from a recipe and actually seeing someone make it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how you make a recipe, but you may do a little twist or some little thing that's not written. And that's where, to me, learning to play by, from someone else is
I have a friend who would tell a story about watching his mother make biscuits. And he wrote down every single movement that she made in doing the biscuits to try to do the same thing and could never achieve it because it was the way her hands worked somehow or other.
There's some things that just don't translate. There's another story that I think sheds a wonderful light on traditionalism, and I learned this during my apprenticeship as a chef, and that is that this particular friend of mine out in the country wanted me to come by. His family invited me to come by and fix a turkey dinner, because their grandmother had always done it a certain way. And he said, now, she always cut the turkey dinner, the turkey in half. And I said, well, there's no way that can be good. And I said, do you know what her reason was for that? He said, well, that's just how she did it. And he thought it was to make the bird taste better. And I sort of did a little exploring. I looked at the grandmother's recipe, and I did a little Sherlock Holmes in detective work to find out why this bird was cut in half, because any kind of liquid is going to ooze out, no matter how well you sear it. Putting it in that position, it's going to dry out on you. And he said something about her literally steaming this thing in its own juices, but the meat itself was frequently dry. You just sort of sauced it up. And I said, well, there's a better way to do this, because the recipe she had wonderful spices in it, and they could be well contained. And I came to find out that the reason she cut the bird in half was because the stove she was baking it in was not big enough to hold the whole bird. So we solved that mystery.
Absolutely. So you never know
that's right.
How
you
these
just
things
don't know.
Come about.
So don't cut that bird in two, please. So back to the dulcimer.
Yeah, well, let's play something else.
What's it going to be?
It's going to be, well, I'm going to try to demonstrate the difference between using the noter and fingering, which, of course, fingering, you're just moving your fingers along the note strings to make the melody. I'm not very good at it, but it gives a slightly different sound, so I thought I would kind of demonstrate that, and then I'll kind of go into a song using the noter. But Go Tell Aunt Rhody, of course, the song that a lot of people recognize. Mm-hmm. To describe the way the noter makes the dulcimer sound, it's almost like mercury rolling around on a plate. It kind of gives this sort of silvery metallic sound, the way you're sliding it. Maybe you'll hear some of that while I'm playing.
Just don't let it slip into the fish.
Us all
beautiful.
Rocking back and forth here.
It's the same thing that happens to with my grandmother and the people around her when I visit.
Right.
It's I don't know, it just speaks to her on some level,
respond
like you say.
Respond to the music, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's neat, like you were saying, people remember things where they can't remember, you know, short-term things.
Right.
And the people recognize the songs and they sing along. And a lot of the songs you play on the adults, or at least traditionally, will be children's songs like Bingo or This Old Man and Go Tell Aunt Rhody and things like that.
It's easy to see where dance can be inspired by very quickly.
Mm-hmm. How long does it take you to learn a song? Because I'm just in listening to that, I'm thinking you have to hear. I mean, I think it would be a lot easier to read the notes somewhere.
It's a pretty extensive progression.
But you have
to
hear every little sound there.
And I've kind of tried to figure that out myself, because I did take some piano lessons, you know, and I'm like, what is the difference of learning one way versus the other? To some degree, when you're following on a staff, okay, you understand that this interval means you do this. And I kind of have that, I guess, in my... my body, in my bones, where when you
are
hear,
the rhythm section.
I am. I am my own grandpa. When
remember that one?
Yeah. When I hear something, I translate that. I don't know. It's like a filter, I guess you'd say. Uh-huh. It tells me where that needs to go. It's almost more felt, I guess, in a way than.
So it's almost like in listening, you transcribe the music into your bones, or your brain, or your blood, or whatever.
But it really is the same. Like you're visually looking at the music,
right.
Okay? And when I hear, I kind of have that same. It's not
response.
A visual, right? But
right.
But I have
almost
that.
A body memory.
As much
as a memory in itself.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
well,
way
let's
to put
say
it.
That you know some people are. Visual manual, and some people are oral by the ear and oral by the mouth.
Mm-hmm. And some are dyslexic.
And all
so
of that.
There we go. And they can all make music.
I'm very visual.
But as far as how long it takes, I mean, learning a basic melody on the dulcimer is not a difficult, really, thing to do. It's really, and the neat thing about the dulcimer is a very, to some degree, easy instrument to learn to play, which makes it real conducive to working with kids, because you're just straight up and down the note strings. There's no sharps, there's no flats, there's no keys. I guess the I don't say difficult part, but the part that you have to evolve is the technique. Mm-hmm. And the rhythm. And in a way, sometimes there'll be songs I want to play, but they just don't style-wise translate to the way the dulcimer is played and the typical rhythms. And I'll play things and people won't quite recognize what I'm playing. You know, and so sometimes the difficulty is in trying to learn to play a certain song that you have to kind of adapt for the style of the dulcimer. And then there's just all the techniques you can learn, the noting with the fingers and the bowing and using different, well, these are called plectrums, the noters.
Have you ever used the bow?
I have not. Uh-huh. I have not.
I can also imagine different surfaces, like if you put that on a table, it's going to have a lot more of a dynamic
sound. A lot more
sound.
Resonance, resonance. A lot of people do like to play with it out on the table.
Maybe in a pub or something. Pick up the volume a bit. Mm-hmm. Get that guy in the corner stepping out.
Well, you say there are electric dulcimers.
There are.
So imagine if you're going to play in a crowd or something, you could really amp it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. I would say it's not a limitation. It's just what the dulcimer is. It's more suited towards smaller venues.
Mm-hmm.
I call my business, my playing business, Porch and Parlor Dulcimer. Because,
where people play, basically.
You're outside, but you're on the porch. You're inside, but it's more like a small porch. And I do use an amp for larger venues, but it's not really a concert instrument, which to some degree is why it's not made it into the mainstream. It's more used to accompany, or kind of provide sort of a melody line.
Where's home to you right now?
Raleigh.
In Raleigh?
Mm-hmm.
I thought so. Yeah.
Yep, I live in Raleigh.
Interesting how her and I met through Chris Gladden. Hello, Chris. I think you're probably listening
He's
out
listening.
There. Enjoyed the wedding, by the way. Hope all things are going well with the honeymoon. Not Chris's wedding, but his daughter, Heather. Just want to say that... Melanie and I met over the phone via Chris to discuss how I should put my Tropical Moon seasoning on the market and found out other things about her, and here she is on the radio show teaching us about the dulcimer.
Entertaining us all.
That's right.
It's a tempting instrument. Lovely to look at.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give one more quick plug to Sherry Monahan about her book called Apex, North Carolina. Give read a paragraph of what the book is all about very quickly, and then we'll go back to some more of Melanie. This quaint, picturesque community has an interesting history. For years, it was a rural hamlet with a nearby pond, simply called Log Pond. It later became Apex, and the pond was eventually drained in the name of progress. Yeah, don't we know too much about that? Apex appeared on the map because of the coal fields in Chatham and Lee County. The coal companies needed to get their coal to Raleigh, and around 1870, the Chatham Railroad was chugging along right by Log Pond. It officially became Apex with the establishment of a post office. Apex put the railroad to use immediately and shipped lumber, tar, turpentine, and pitch. Early on, Apex passed a few ordinances reminiscent of the Wild West, including those dealing with whiskey, gambling, and prostitution. Ah, the interesting times. The town suffered two fires in the early 1900s. Of course, it had that chemical fire not too long ago, I inject. But its residents persevered, and Apex's small town charm is still enjoyed today. Local author and historian Sherry Monahan was attracted to Apex because of its charm and interesting history. She has 4 published books about the Old West and has applied the same tenacity in researching Apex. She interviewed town locals with deep family roots and sifted through dusty archive books to paint Apex's vivid history. And Sherry is really very good at that. I had her on the show not very long ago about her Western books, and she is very thorough in her research. The Images of America series celebrates the history of neighborhoods, towns, and cities across the country. Using archival photographs, each title represents the distinctive stories from the past that shape the character of the community today. Arcadia is proud to play a part in the preservation of local heritage, making history available to all. And that is about author Sherry Monahan and her book, Apex, which will appear in Apex in November, and then I think it'll go nationwide. But I just wanted to give another plug there. Now it's back to Melanie Moore and the Dulcimer. I'm here in the studio with Audrey Layden of Carborough Bookbeat, who's my host this week and next week, my co-host, and yours truly, Claudio. And back to you, Melanie.
Yeah. That what you just read, actually, I should have been accompanying that with the Cherry Tree Carol, which is a song I'll play now. It's from the 1400s, which is roughly about the time the Scheitholt, the German predecessor to the dulcimer, was developed. And it's the story of the Cherry Tree Carol. It comes from one of the apocryphal books of the Bible that, of course, not included in our standard Bible today. But the story is that Mary and Joseph were going to Bethlehem for the census, and they stopped in a cherry orchard, and Mary asked for some cherries, and I don't know, Joseph was in a mood, I suppose, and didn't want to get them for her. He didn't want to bother or whatnot. And the story is that the infant Jesus from the womb commanded the limbs of the branches of the cherry tree to lower for Mary so that she could partake of the cherries. And, of course, Joseph witnesses this miracle and, immediately, repents of his...
behave himself.
Right, exactly. So,
not to mention all the fish stories he told about that one.
And actually, this style of song, there was a period of time according to the outsiders, I guess, around Appalachia, when they were looking at Appalachian music historically, tended to associate it with Elizabethan music. It was kind of romanticized. So people weren't really encouraged to develop other styles of music to play with it. And so a lot of people, and still do, I think, associate particularly the hammered dulcimer with more Elizabethan or classical style music. So this is a tune that, you know, it's kind of along those lines with that style.
Sound.
Yeah.
Very lovely.
I sense a little bit of the Scottish Highlands in that one as well.
My cousin, I have a cousin, David Pulliam, who plays organ in Winston-Salem. He majored in organ. That's one of the songs I learned by ear. He kind of he sang it to me one holiday until I learned it, but he uses words to help you with the rhythm, and it's it's that blueberry, strawberry. So,
have you written any of your own songs?
Sometimes. I when I used to play piano, I would just kind of fiddle around and make up more things than I have. I've got one song that I wrote that was sort of, or a tune. It was my same cousin David and my my other cousin Jay, who used to play and get into trouble a lot at my grandmother's house. So I do have a little tune that I play that was to sound like them playing, and then you could hear my grandmother coming into the picture. And
you play it discipline. For us?
I'm sure.
Good. Great. Yeah.
What do you call this thing?
I just call it Jay and David.
Jay and David,
okay.
Because
this is my cousins, yeah. Okay. Let's see.
Beautiful. Absolutely.
Well, I would have figured that was something traditional had you not told me that you just did that.
Do you ever consider making a CD or anything?
I have. Lately,
I've actually mentioned that to her myself.
You know, and we were talking earlier. I haven't. You know, it wasn't a matter of sort of deciding I play music and now I'm going to do this. Then I'm going to play in the venues or get an agent or whatever. It's just a very slow evolution for me in terms of kind of looking at different possibilities. And I've gotten to the point where I have a pretty good repertoire, and I'm working on, of course, holiday songs now because I tend to play during the holidays. Uh-huh. And that's what I'll be doing, you know, at Crow Ridge in December.
And like the rest of us, you're holding down a job, which is always a weight on getting
artistic
things accomplished. Oh,
just
got
married in May, so I've got quite a lot going on. Of course, I've mentioned my grandmother.
Hold on.
A lot of time.
Two teenage kids, you got married in May. What happened here?
I already had the kids, of course.
Ah, okay.
They came along with the package.
I thought maybe you had some time zone thing happening there.
Yeah, so.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're talking about I don't know, dulcimers being kind of in the mainstream or not. And there's actually some, Joni Mitchell did a lot to help share dulcimers with sort of British rock musicians. Cindy Lauper, although I don't know that she's British, she plays the dulcimer quite a bit in her albums, the Appalachian Dulcimer. The Rolling Stones song Lady Jane features the Appalachian Dulcimer.
Yeah.
And Aerosmith has a song, I can't remember the name of the album, but it's the same album that Love in an Elevator is on. It's called The Dulcimer Stomp. And it's a song just written for the dulcimer. It kind of surprised me when I started looking into it. But it just, I don't know, it's an instrument that kind of, it catches you, you know, it just doesn't seem to go out of vogue. It's always around. It's just like this momentum, I guess.
And it's a very attractive
instrument.
Comes
in and out.
Well, a lot of people I know, I had someone hear me play, oh, where can I get one of those? I thought, oh, you want to learn to play? And they said, no, I just think it would look really nice on my mantelpiece.
Oh, great.
You know, so you meet people that, yeah, I know the dulcimer, but and I do have one, but I've never played it.
I don't know how you could
beautiful.
Have it and not try to play it.
No, I'd have, even yeah. if I even if I couldn't, I'd be making some noise.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So what else do you have in store for us as far as that? You have a whole list of
traditional
things.
I thought
things.
I might play, you know, because it does have kind of a religious, you know, connection. I'll just play a couple of kind of Southern Protestant religious church songs that, you know, you would hear.
Do they have names? Or?
Amazing Grace.
Of course.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then I like to throw in Do Lord, you know, Do Lord, oh, Do Lord, oh, Do Remember Me. I like to throw that in, too. So I'll play that.
Just kicking back and listening to music today, folks, so don't worry about not much dialogue coming at you. This is quite helpful, actually, me recovering from a bit of a bronchial injury, I would say, right after the filming. So that's the reason you've been hearing reruns the past couple of weeks. My apologies for that, but we're back now. This is live. This is Melanie Moore on Dulcimer. Mm-hmm. And I think that the next one is Amazing Grace. Is that what you're going to play?
That's what I just played.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was.
You were listening.
I thought I detected it in there.
Well, that's what I said. Sometimes you play, you know, traditional or songs on it, and it has a slightly different bent to it. And you kind of takes you, yeah, not that it's totally unrecognizable, but it adds kind of...
But it's very lulling music, because I'm sitting here just getting completely relaxed, going, hey, you've got a radio show, get him on.
So you say you don't really go at your music in a hard and fast and furious way. It's evolving.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see it? Do you have some idea of where it will go?
Well, like Claudia, the sort of bio that you read earlier, I just have always had this, I guess, kind of little childhood dream of being a piano bar player, and that was originally when I played piano, more just for the enjoyment of it, just kind of sharing it, not so much, you know, to make money or a living. And that's what I really like to do.
It's not bad when that happens, though.
Oh, no. It doesn't hurt. No. I actually had one of my first paying gigs at Whole Foods here recently.
Very nice.
For their local
Whole Foods
festival.
Where? In Raleigh?
In Raleigh, yeah. In the Raleigh store.
When I was a kid, I saw, I forget the movie that he was, maybe you, I forget the movie. It was Hoagy Carmichael, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he's at the piano. And, of course, he's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. And this is, I know, this is not correct, but when I was a kid, I wanted to play like Hoagy Carmichael.
You wanted that cigarette in the corner of your lips.
I wanted the cigarette in the corner of my mouth, and I wanted to play Old Buttermilk Sky and be a piano bar player.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I would, much to my brother's horror, I would sit there with the cigarette hanging out of my mouth, you know, smoke going up, trying to play the piano. Of course, I don't play by ear. I have to see the music. I couldn't see it because
so between looking through the smoke and half choking, you were hitting something.
In my eyes.
That's how honky tonk was invented.
Exactly. I think it saved me from a life of a terrible ill repute or something, because I couldn't see through the smoke.
It's funny how that cigarette thing got sold so early on. I remember just about every movie in the 60s came out with the opening scene, some guy either lighting a cigarette or, you know, holding one in the corner of his mouth while getting ready to shoot somebody,
exactly.
Looking tough. It was
part of the whole picture.
The tobacco companies did well with
yeah,
all that.
They certainly did. Ruined a lot of lives.
I know. And as a kid, I actually tried smoking for a little while and then got bored with it, and I never really picked it up again.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally it's a pipe or cigar now, but I mean, I actually got bored with smoking and stopped.
Uh-huh.
So it's boring too, folks. Not just bad for you.
So you want to play at a piano bar. It will be not, since most of the places are non-smoking anyway, you wouldn't have to worry about
that.
That
wouldn't be a problem. That's right.
No, right. Yeah. It's so much nicer these days.
And you
that.
Play piano by ear as well?
I did. Uh-huh. It's like I kind of come and go with different instruments. I mean, I didn't pick up the dulcimer until like my 30s, you know,
right.
So
right.
It's kind of a later in life thing. And then it just kind of evolved out of the piano. And I think I'm going to stick with this. I've just kind of started to develop it more, and wanting to, really a big part of my motivation in playing is sharing it and preserving it, because of the history, you know, with traditional instruments. And to some degree, that's my reason for wanting to play, you know, out in public at coffee bars, intimate places like that, because then people can talk to you and ask you questions, and you can explain, you can
and
show
the interaction's
them
part
how
of the
to
fun.
Play. And
right.
The interaction to me, and that's very fulfilling part to me of playing an instrument like this, is that you do have some, it's not so obtrusive, you know, that you can't interact with people and even teach them to play.
Well, I'm going to be terribly rude again and just give a quick PSA for WCOM's behalf.
Yay!
Your community radio station, WCOM 103.5 FM, will be broadcasting the Weaver Street Market Co-op annual meeting with a full speech on local economics by Michael Schumann. Next Thursday, well, this is this Thursday, November 5th at 7 p.m., so part of Carborough Live. Be sure to listen. Just wanted to let you know that. Do you have anything else you wanted to add there about your Carborough book beat coming up, Audrey?
Yeah, let everybody out there know that there is a Carborough book beat show on Monday mornings at 10 o'clock.
There we go.
And we have Nick Brown coming on talking about his book, Flood Markers, which is what happens to a town in sort of a 24-hour or 12-hour period when Hurricane Hugo is coming, and they think they're going to get hit. And it's little excerpts of how this affects people in the town. It's a very nicely
What's that little one-liner book. That came with Hugo? Whatever you go, I go?
Anyway, Nick has a full-time job over here at the Alexander... Oh, what's the art museum over there?
Carborough?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where? Help. Ooh.
That's gone right out of my head. It's the art museum right
She's
there.
She's going
on,
out of her head.
On South Columbia.
Well, you know where that is, folks. Somewhere down the road.
Yes.
So he works
anyway,
there?
Anyway, he works there.
I see.
And he came in. And this is going to be a pre-recorded show. So
you went and recorded him live at his place.
So we recorded him live. But that's coming up, and then the week after that, we have Bill Ferris coming on, who wrote Give My Poor Heart Ease, and this is a book about the Memphis Blues.
Oh, wow.
And he has interviewed musicians all in the whole Delta area, not the Memphis Blues, the Delta Blues.
Delta Blues,
and
I got you.
And it's got, I'm really looking forward to it because it's got a CD with it. We'll hear some music, and he is with the Institute on Documentary of Southern Studies or something
that
here at UNC, and it's a fabulous book.
Fantastic. So, well, that's coming up Monday mornings at 10 a.m. So tune in, folks, on WCOM. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, and I'm here in the studio with my co-host Audrey Layden of Carborough Bookbeat that you just heard about, and also Melanie Moore, who's teaching us about the dulcimer. And maybe we'll play a few licks by the time we're done with the show. Who knows?
I'll teach you to play. Like I said, it's not a hard instrument to learn to play
at all. You say that you have made them.
Mm-hmm.
How hard is it to make?
Well, interestingly enough, there are a lot of dulcimer kits you can buy online now.
Hmm.
And I find it interesting. A lot of people haven't heard of dulcimers, but they're everywhere.
I've definitely heard of them.
There are cardboard dulcimers.
Really?
I mean, think cardboard. A little better grade cardboard than like a box, but
right.
There are
you mean
cardboard.
Play one tune and throw it away?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like making it out of a cigar box guitar
right.
Or banjo
yeah,
or something.
Exactly, with rubber bands.
The disposable dulcimers.
But you can order kits to do them online. Of course, the one I made in the wood shop at NC State in the Craft Center. And that, you know, you see mine is the hourglass shape, so you've got the bend in the side woods that you have to wet
and train.
You have
to learn how to bend them.
Yeah, there's a little more work to doing that. But
Are they glued together?
Yes, basically. Yeah, and you just use the, you know, C-clamps to...
Now, do you still use the one that you've built?
No.
No, it's just what?
It's hanging on the mantle.
Right.
It's the lonely one, I see.
It's the decorative piece. Yeah.
So what are you going to play us next?
I'll play another song that I picked off that Gene Ritchie album called I Never Will Marry. It's kind of traditional sad love song.
The confirmed bachelorette.
Yeah.
All right.
We did mention, of course, I play left-handed, and so
right.
I play cross-handed. Mm-hmm. So if you could see me, I'm kind of limited in reaching from my left side over to strum. Most people would play with their right hand. There's actually a depression up at the end of the fretboard where most people would strum. It's a little more open. I want to say tinny, but it's a little more treble. Sound. I'm playing right over the body of the instrument because of the shortness of my reach, which... You know, I like the mellowness of that range.
I guess if I
could somehow learn to play right, Maybelle Carter, who played one, used to play it upside down because she was left-handed.
I was just
going to
suggest that for you.
I can't quite envision that. Even if you got a left-handed instrument, you'd still...
Oh, the instrument was upside down.
Yes.
Oh, I thought Maybelle was standing on her head.
Or backwards. Somehow she would turn it so that
Sorry, Maybelle.
play it right-handed, even though she was left-handed.
That's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, so...
When you say upside down, I mean
I can't quite envision. My mom tells me about this that
means holding the strings toward your lap.
Somehow she'd play it. I really can't
Fantastic.
Envision
yeah.
from what I've described how she would do that, just so that she could play, you know, the tune with her left hand instead of crossing over.
Yeah.
So as you say, you know, I have some limitations because I can't get that, you know, up there to get this.
Right.
But that's again the beauty of the dulcimer to me is that everybody has some little quirk or a piece or a technique or something they use that
makes
it personality. Yeah, it kind of personalizes it. Yeah.
So the middle part of it is more mellow.
It's more mellow because it picks up the resonance in the body. Mm-hmm.
We're down to our last few minutes, so if you want to try and squeeze in another couple of tunes,
that'd be great.
Okay. Exit the speakeasy.
I play one of my grandmother's favorite songs. This seems to be one that a lot of the older people like to hear. Daisy, Her Bicycle Built for Two.
Yes.
Can sort of hear this hum, this kind of the hum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's actually sort of a legend among dulcimer players that there's an extinct insect that lives inside the dulcimer.
Uh-huh.
It's a moth that beats its wings and creates that kind of hum that you hear above.
And he's actually saying, keep it down!
Did you ever hear the answer to that, to Daisy Daisy song?
No.
Harry, here is my answer true. I'm not half crazy off the love of you. There won't be any marriage if you can't afford a carriage, for I'll be switched if I'll be hitched on a bicycle built for two.
Well, I think we have time for one, possibly two more. We've got a few minutes left.
Okay.
So go at. Oh, by the way, do you mind if we call this the show today when we archive it a little dulcimer therapy with Melanie Moore?
Sure, that sounds great.
Sounds good.
Good. Right. That'll be the name of the show, and it'll probably be podcast by tomorrow. I don't think we're going to podcast it. We won't have time to podcast today, but we will have it podcast for you tomorrow.
Okay.
And you can go to wcomfm.org and click on podcasts and look for Claudio's Speakeasy, Literary, and all else. For everything that's been podcast on there.
Absolutely. And if all else fails, you can always go to my website, claudioarts.com, and find the radio show link there, and it'll instruct you as to everything Audrey just said.
I think I'll play a holiday tune, which I play this year round. Playing it on the dulcimer just has kind of a Irish jobby feel to it. I'm just going to play Good King Wenceslas.
Ah, yes. Thank you. That was Melanie Moore on dulcimer. She's been with us for the hour and absolutely hypnotized us with her dulcimer playing. I'm going to have to snap out of it now. Had Audrey Layden here as my co-host. She's with Carborough Bookbeat and will be here with me again next week on the next Speakeasy. This is Claudio of Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, signing off until next time. Cheers.